Dad was sleeping when I arrived at 7:45 a.m., a February morning in 2018. I was taking over from the carer who had an urgent appointment. I was free that day anyway, in a holding pattern, waiting to hear if a film about Roald Dahl was going to happen or not happen. It had been in development for 2 years, and after several false starts was nearly ready to go into pre-production. Nearly. As is so often true of independent films, delicately put together by a coalition of the willing, rather than one studio with a checkbook, we'd hurried to the start line and were now waiting for one last piece of the jigsaw, financing dependent on confirmation of my co-star, to slot into place. Then we could mix metaphors and start taxiing along the runway. So, I had time spare to spend with Dad. And time was precious. He was in the early stages of dementia. While I waited for him to wake up, I sat on the sofa by the baby grand piano in the living room of his flat, the downstairs of a converted Edwardian house. I picked up a family album from the coffee table and began to leaf through it. My darling mum had passed away 3 Christmases previously, my brother 10 months ago. Then my dad's twin brother died. My father had suffered a great deal of loss lately, but strangely, because of the softening of his brain and the inevitable loosening of his attachment to the world, he had not seemed particularly emotional about any of these events. Then again, I never saw Dad cry. That's not to say he was a hard or heartless man. On the contrary, you could not meet a more twinkly-eyed, good-natured soul. When introduced to ladies of any age, he'd usually kiss their hand theatrically. But he was never one to express deeper feelings. As I've tried to fathom him more in recent years, I think I've put this sense of emotional distance down to his own father before him. He greatly admired his father, a surveyor, who suffered from shell shock in the First World War. It was one of the 5 or so stories my dad still had access to, and repeated on a regular basis, weekly, if not daily. "My father was blown up on the first day of the Somme, you know, thrown right up in the air. Have I not told you this story?" "Well, yes, and when he landed, he said he felt like he was a blob of jelly on a slab of ice. He never rode a bike or drove a car after that." Nor did he ever talk about the war, apparently. After his experience in the fields of France, he became a man of few words and even fewer gestures. My father rarely gave me a hug on impulse when I was a kid, a kiss at bedtime, sure, if I was still awake when he got home from work at the hospital. I don't think his parents hugged him or his twin brother much, although they loved them both. Once I'd got over the awkwardness of being a teenager, when any familial expression of emotion was, quite frankly, hideous, I consciously started to hug Dad hello and goodbye. It's not that he recoiled in embarrassment when I kissed him on the cheek or put my arm round his shoulder, but I think he found it unusual, just not part of his makeup. My grandfather, John Pritchard Williams, same name as my dad, died before I was born. Grandma Dorothy was a Methodist, serious but sweet in her own way, bird-like and quietly spoken. Dad said the only time he saw her drink alcohol was the night they went to see Donald Wolfit in King Lear. She was so traumatized by his performance that in the interval she ordered a port and lemon. Saturday afternoons in East Sheen in southwest London, where we lived when I was a kid, saw me being deposited round the corner at Grandma's. A trip to the toy shop, Fred Cross, on the corner of Thornton and the Upper Richmond Roads was the bribe. Grandma lived in the ground floor flat of a 2-story conversion in Palewell Park. My Cassie lived upstairs. For years, I assumed a Cassie was some sort of relative that everyone had, like an aunt twice removed or something. But in fact, she wasn't a blood relative at all, and had evidently married into the family in a manner that was never fully explained to me. Only recently did I discover that she had in fact been nanny to my father and his brother, and when their grandmother died, Cassie married their grandfather. Perhaps some of the family didn't approve. By the time I came along, Cassie had a fantastic beard. Both she and Grandma smelt of old. Although Cassie had better biscuits and her bright kitchen upstairs looked out over the rooftops of Sheen, I felt duty-bound to have tea with Grandma in her altogether more gloomy flat below. She would put the television on just as the afternoon sports were coming to an end. Time for final score. The living room was sepulchral, with dark Edwardian furniture and heavy curtains. Add to that the incantation of football results emanating from the telly, and the whole thing was like being in a brown tomb listening to Gregorian chant without the laughs.